We're talking about guaranteed income pilot programs in cities around the country and this push toward universal basic income, or UBI. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. California Governor Gavin Newsom announced last month he's committing $35 million of his state budget to help local governments fund universal income pilot programs for low-income families. What do you think of this move? Do you want your city to launch a guaranteed basic income program? And at the federal level, how do you feel about UBI? 800-642-1234. Jim Pugh co-founded the Universal Income Project, a group that advocates for implementing a universal basic income. Jim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. It's great to be here.
Well, let's start with some working definitions so we're all at the same place. Guaranteed income is similar to, but not quite the same as, universal basic income, or UBI. Can you explain the nuance here?
Absolutely. So both of these programs have at their core the same principle, which is that everyone in our society should have this minimum income floor that allows them to cover their basic costs and needs. They're getting cash that is unconditional. They can spend it on whatever they want, whatever they need, and they don't have to check any boxes. They don't have to jump through any hoops. The difference between UBI, universal basic income, and guaranteed income is in some of the details about what the right way to approach the program is. So UBI is universal. It's something that we go to everyone in our society, that no matter who you are, at a regular interval, probably every month, you would be getting this either a check in the mail, a deposit in your account at a certain level. And that would be the same for everyone. A guaranteed income isn't necessarily universal. It might only go to some people who are more in need, those who had a lower income level to start with, but it would ensure that everyone reached a certain income floor. Another key difference is UBI, depending on who's talking about it, sometimes it's proposed as a replacement for other social programs, saying we get rid of things we have today and have this instead. Whereas a guaranteed income is talked about as a supplement or enhancement to our current social contract. So it's something that would be in addition to other programs.
And critics of UBI are concerned about people becoming dependent on the state for income. What do you say to people who see this as a peer handout?
You know, that is, it's such a common reaction, and it's actually really all the evidence we have around this, because we've at this point done a lot of pilot programs, there's been a lot of research, and it shows that if you give people an income floor, rather than making them dependent, it actually opens up doors for them and allows them to get farther ahead on their own. One of the most prominent recent studies around a guaranteed income took place in Stockton that just finished up in the last year. Stockton, California. And what they found there is that people who received this guaranteed income, getting $500 a month for 2 years, they compared those folks to similar folks who weren't receiving it. And the people receiving it actually ended up with more of them getting jobs over that period of time than those who didn't. And if you think about the situation of people in our society today, so many folks are living in extreme financial precarity where they are just barely getting by and they don't actually have the time or resources to figure out how to improve their lives. And so by providing that income floor, you actually enable them to, whether that's taking time away off one shift on work, whether that's getting some education on the side, to do things that puts them in a better position to get farther ahead. And so rather than this being something that would build dependency, what we've seen consistently is that this is something that actually increases people's agency and allows them to become more self-sufficient.
You know, you mentioned Stockton and Michael Tubbs, the former mayor there, who was out of the gate early and had one of the first pilot programs, as you know, in the country. He said in an interview recently, this is a necessity. This could be our generation's social security. What do you think he means by that?
Just like social security back, if you look 80 years ago when that was being passed, it was seen as a radical socialist idea at the time. The idea that people above a certain age should receive effectively just guaranteed income. And what we saw was that this actually made such an improvement of people's lives. It allowed them at a certain point to have that fundamental security. And so they had more options. And this is essentially taking that idea and expanding it, saying that we, at this point in time, we should be looking beyond that. It shouldn't just be people who are over the age of 65 or 67, that everyone in our society, because we have the wealth to do it, we should now be guaranteeing this fundamental floor for everyone. And so it is in some ways, I think, a very natural step forward in the social contract that we have built over the last century.
We're talking with Jim Pugh, who co-founded the Universal Income Project. The group advocates for ways to implement a universal basic income. Taking your questions, your thoughts, pros and cons, 800-642-1234. Brad is joining us from Milwaukee. Brad, hi.
Hi, good morning. How are you guys doing?
Doing well.
I guess my my comment is, you know, if you look through the pandemic and you look at the payments that the government made, statistically, you know, the people who needed it, they used it for what was necessary. Rent, bills, stuff like that. Obviously, it's not, you know, wasteful spending. And throughout our history, the government's plan of attack has always been throw more money on it, whether it be, you know, just in general war, the war on drugs, just throw blankets amount of money at something to solve a problem. And yet now when it comes to maybe throwing money at this problem might be the key, it's let's pull back the reins on, you know, what has been our policy standard for like 100+ years. I mean, I'm perfectly fine with an extra $10 in taxes. I mean, I don't have to know someone to care about them. If it means someone else can put food on the table, not have to worry, I'm fine with that.
Brad, thank you. You know, I'm wondering, Jim, as you've watched pandemic relief aid being given out through stimulus checks, through unemployment insurance, child tax credits, what impact does that have on your work to advance basic income?
It's really been a massive shift. That prior to the pandemic, there was already interest in this idea, but it was, I would say, more abstract. And what we've seen over the last year and a half now is that there's suddenly this recognition and realization about both how necessary and how powerful programs like this can be. Because as was just noted, people who receive these stimulus checks spend it on what they needed. And so you got a chance to see firsthand what a difference cash could make when you actually give people the flexibility and the agency of being able to use those funds on what was most needed and most important to them, that was really impactful in their lives.
Let's bring in Maryam in West Bend. Maryam, hi, go ahead.
Good morning. I think before we think about a universal income, I think we have to have the conversation about universal health care. I don't care how much money we give entry-level, low-income people who are struggling, they still cannot afford their health insurance. So especially those people who are on the public marketplace or the Affordable Care Act, there's nothing affordable for low-income people relative to open market healthcare premiums. They are spending a disproportionate amount of money per month on their health premiums, and they are foregoing natural, good health care. And I don't see that anyone's life has changed with the stimulus money. 3 months worth of rent, perhaps, maybe some necessities they didn't have before, but nobody spent it on their health insurance, I'll bet. And now we still have people without health insurance, and a fundamental difference in their life would be giving universal health care for the same price that you're talking about, perhaps doing universal income.
Yeah, Maryam, thank you for those comments. Jim, what is the correlation here with the cost of health care?
So I should say up front, I don't see this as an either or, that I think there's absolutely big changes that we do need to our healthcare system to address the many, many challenges that we face with it today. And so that something like a guaranteed income, I think, actually works best in tandem with something like universal healthcare, because on one hand, you have those specific challenges around healthcare that need to be addressed. And on the other, what we know is that poverty is a massive drain on an individual's health and on society as a whole on our healthcare system, because when you don't actually have enough money to cover your basic needs, it doesn't allow you to take those steps to be more preventative, to actually address the challenges you're having around health, as well as putting extra strain and stress on you that's causing more issues in the first place.
Jim Pugh is with the Universal Income Project based in the San Francisco Bay Area. A guaranteed income is a monthly cash payment given directly to people, unconditional, no strings attached, no work requirements. How do you feel about such a program for your city? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. Have the stimulus checks and pandemic aid moved our country toward embracing universal basic income, or UBI? We're discussing it here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. More than 50 mayors nationwide, including Madison, Milwaukee, and Wausau, they have signed onto the organization called Mayors for a Guaranteed Income. Is your city one of them? Do you think your community should explore a guaranteed income program? What do you want to know about outcomes for these programs? Be part of this. 800-642-1234. Jim Pugh co-founded the Universal Income Project, and he's with us for the hour. Jim, I want to dig deeper into poverty, and it seems the ultimate goal here on these programs is to wipe out poverty. But what does that mean? What does that entail, you see these pilot programs?
So the pilot programs on their own are in many ways meant as demonstrations. It allows us to better see up close what sort of impact it can have if you are providing this fundamental floor for people. The next step beyond that is then to say, what does it look like if that happens for everyone? And that, I think, is where the real transformative potential of a guaranteed income actually lies. Because what society, when we have poverty in society, it's not just bad for the individuals in poverty, it's bad for all of us. That if we have people homeless on the street, if we have people who are in desperate straits and are turning to crime as a way of dealing with that, if we have people who can't address their health needs until it becomes an emergency and then have to rush to the emergency room, that's putting more financial burden on us as a whole. And so if we can actually provide that underlying floor, ensuring that no one is in absolute poverty, I think it's almost hard to imagine how much difference that could make for all of our lives if we can take that leap.
What about the LIFT Act, legislation in Congress, $500 a month, every month to every family making $100,000 or less, kind of a form of guaranteed income? What do you make of this legislation?
I mean, I think that would be great. I think that what we're seeing pop up in a lot of places now is programs that embrace the idea of providing this unconditional, this cash with no strings attached. And those are all great steps in that direction. I think that something like the LIFT Act would be transformative for so many people. It's not voting universal. And so I would like it if it really included everyone below a certain income level. But it would certainly be a big, big step in that direction.
Other budget policy experts say, the cost of UBI greatly exceeds the cost of all social safety net programs combined. And if you would start to eliminate some of those social safety net programs, you could worsen poverty. Is that a risk?
I think as far as eliminating other programs, there is risk there because as flawed as imperfect as our existing social safety net is, it's still providing some very core relief and sometimes very targeted relief to people in need. And so when we at Universal Income Project talk about a guaranteed income or UBI, we do talk about it as a supplement to what exists today, not removing anything. But as far as cost, I think that oftentimes the way we think about supporting people doesn't really allow us to grapple with this idea in a particularly great way. If you take a step back and think about what does it cost? Can we eliminate poverty? Do we have the resources to do it? I think recognizing first that we as a society produce twice as much food as we need to feed everyone, and we have far more vacant housing than we need to house anyone. And so if you look at it solely from that perspective, you realize that we actually do have the capability to ensure no one is in poverty. It's just a question of whether we choose to figure out to do it and in what way we do. And so I think as far as thinking about what is the cost of this program, it's just a matter of what is our priorities as far as expenditures and whether we actually want to take that step to invest in people so that over the long run, we're ensuring that everyone in our society can contribute, can be a productive member.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the fight for universal basic income with Jim Pugh. He co-founded the Universal Income Project. It works to advance these income programs. You can join in with your thoughts. Do you think if someone is living in poverty, a set amount of money each month to help them pay bills is a good idea? What questions do you have about these guaranteed income programs? How it would work? 800-642-1234. Margie is joining us from Milwaukee. Margie, what are your thoughts here?
Hi. I think it's more than to try. It's time, I think, that the government starts investing in individual people and less in corporations. It was shown that when the corporations got pandemic money, which they shouldn't have in the beginning, the really, really big ones, that they already had an avenue into the banking system, some of the first handouts, and it went to stock buybacks and things, and it didn't really help. And trickle down hasn't worked, so maybe trickle up will. If you think about the money that's going into corporations and people are just and buy, if they get the money, then maybe they could start investing.
Yeah, Margie. Thank you, Margie. Jim, you know, Margie, they're looking to corporate America and the amount of wealth there and saying, can we try a trickle up theory?
I think that's a great way of describing it because it is. It's exactly as Margie was saying. It's investing in people, recognizing that those in the best place to make the best decision about people's lives are themselves. That rather than saying, let's fund things at the top and then expect some of it to make its way down, let's bring that support in at the bottom, allow people to spend that money to invest it in themselves, in their families, in their communities, and that's actually what's going to create this strong base that makes our society as a whole stronger.
It seems like Silicon Valley and the tech sector have been, you know, leading in this charge from the corporate side of this. What is the role of corporate sector in this cause?
I think that there are certainly people in that space who are looking ahead to what's actually going to, over the long term, create a strong and healthy society. And so I think that you do see some leaders who are looking to UBI as a key part of that. And so I think hopefully we do see continued contributions. There have been some tech executives who have made donations to help fund some of the pilot programs out there, which is doing great because that's allowed us to get the idea out, to better see how it works in practice and to build support for it. Hopefully there are people who aren't just looking at what is their bottom line for this quarter, but what is the social infrastructure that will allow all parts of our society to thrive. And the more folks that can be embracing that way of looking at the world, I think the more we can be collaborating to improve things here.
Well, let's bring in Craig in Plover, who would like to look at Alaska's model. Craig, hi.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for having me on, Kate.
Sure.
I'm listening to this program. It's very interesting, but it seems like there's two camps. Will it raise the level of standard of living if these payments are made, and what would be the farther reaching impacts? And I'd like to suggest that I've had family members who lived in Alaska, and there is a case study to be done here. Alaskans, based on the petroleum pipeline industry, get a payment each year, and this included, I believe, the adults in the family, as well as the minor children. Each person got a segment of payment in the thousands of dollar range annually based on the petroleum industry. And there would be a case study to be had to go and look at what impact that's had over a long term on lower income families, as well as the general population. There is some factual basis yeah. out there.
Craig, thank you. Jim, what can we learn from Alaska?
That is a great point. And Alaska is actually one of the main sources of evidence and information that those in the guaranteed income space look at. Because as Craig said, that is something where now for 40 years, people, everyone in the state of Alaska, all residents there have been getting this universal income that has come out of this fund that came from oil money in the state. And what we've seen is that that's had a really positive impact on people's lives, that it has improved their health. It's allowed them to get more work, more part-time work at least. And it's really this compelling evidence as to why we should be looking at a program like this at a broader level.
Jim Pugh is co-director of the Universal Income Project. He's explaining how various economic equity programs work. With your thoughts along the way, 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up after a news update on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the idea of universal basic income and how cities are approaching it on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This idea of putting money into people's pockets isn't new. Here's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. with a vision for economic justice.
It seems to me that the civil rights movement must now begin to organize for the guaranteed annual income, begin to organize people all over our country and mobilize forces so that we can bring to the attention of our nation this need.
That's King delivering a speech at Stanford in 67 called The Other America. Did you lose your job in the pandemic? Could you have benefited from some kind of guaranteed income program? Join in 800-642-1234. Jim Pugh is with us, co-founder of the Universal Income Project. Eric has thoughts in Phillips. Hi, Eric. What would you like to add?
Yes. Hi, good morning. I just want to kind of dovetail on Craig's comment on the Alaska experiment there. We were up in Alaska a couple of years ago, and I just want to say, as a non-poverty person, everything is more expensive. I mean, not just things that are shipped up, but day trips, everything. So how does not giving everybody more income just turn out to be majorly inflationary and end up hurting people at the lower end of the economic scale that you're trying to help in the first place?
Eric, thank you so much for that question. Yeah, Jim.
So that is certainly a common concern that people raise about the idea of guaranteed income. And it's something that those of us in the space have been looking very closely at. And what we found is there doesn't seem to be much evidence that when you provide that income floor, it actually does lead to significant inflation. There have now been studies both internationally and in the U.S. that look at what changes when you provide a guaranteed income floor, and people's lives get better, costs don't actually go up that much. I mean, you can think of it as what if we just, a similar example, I think, is looking at what happens if we raise the minimum wage, because that is effectively, for a certain segment of society, creating a larger income floor. And it turns out that's not really the driver of inflation here. Inflation is being driven more by what is the cost to produce other aspects of the supply side of our economy. And just because you're putting more money in people's pockets, you still have that same competition in the marketplace that keeps prices in check. And so I think that when rolling out programs like a guaranteed income, obviously you want to be thoughtful about how you put it in place so it's not disrupting the local economy too much. But just as far as providing people with that additional cash on a regular basis, it we just haven't seen it.
Valerie in Madison sent an email, and they're wondering about the universal basic income in undocumented immigrants. Valerie says, assuming they would not be eligible, this would leave a large swath of our community in our country behind.
So there's different proposals out there about how you treat people who aren't citizens or who aren't documented immigrants. Some proposals do, in fact, include undocumented folks. What's often been discussed is that you would have a residency term requirement that if someone had been living in the U.S. for some number of years, regardless of their documentation status, they would then be eligible. So it's not something where if you just showed up, you'd immediately start receiving it. But if you were clearly a resident, if you've been here for some amount of time, then you would still be eligible to receive.
Guaranteed income is also framed as a way to address economic and racial inequality. What do you see through that lens?
So that is definitely a major point of consideration and a driver within the guaranteed income space, is thinking about what is the inequity that we see in our society today along racial lines. And we have very large inequities, both in terms of income and in terms of wealth. And so we've done some pretty deep analysis around what sort of impact a guaranteed income could have on this. And it can be really, really helpful that even if it's something which is not race targeted, that there's no difference between what people receive based on race. If you are truly pursuing something that is universal, that's not leaving anyone out, because we have these existing inequities in the system, that the money effectively makes more impact for people who are struggling more. And so that does help to close the differences in racial income divide and potentially in the racial wealth divide as well, when you couple this program with other wealth building programs.
And these economic equity programs, you know, this isn't a new concept, as we heard there of Dr. King talking about it in 67. And you trace it back to ancient Roman Greece.
Yeah, the idea in the broad sense has been around for thousands of years, actually, that thinking about what does it take to really create a fully productive society, and the recognition that at a point where society has enough wealth to provide this fundamental floor, which our society today most definitely does, that we are the richest society in the history of the world, that we ought to have this fundamental income floor for folks. And so you see this idea popping up throughout history. Oftentimes you'll hear one of the earliest proponents of the modern idea of a guaranteed income is founding father Thomas Paine, who said, because we are all residents of the United States, that we have this wealth that comes from the land, and that's something that should be shared amongst each other. And then as you mentioned, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was a big proponent as part of his Poor People's Campaign. You even had folks on the right and Republicans and conservatives who were advocating for this idea of an income floor around the same time as Dr. King, Milton Friedman, a libertarian economist, and even Richard Nixon was looking at implementing some form of guaranteed income during his presidency. And so this idea has definitely popped up over time. It's not a modern idea, and it's attracted interest from a broad range of folks.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Jim Pugh, who co-founded the Universal Income Project. It's a group that works to advance in universal basic income programs, and taking your thoughts about it at 800-642-1234. Kristen is joining us from Park Falls this morning. Hi, Kristen. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for having me on the air. Mike, I'll make a comment and then I'll take it off the air. But I was wondering, why couldn't we come up with some sort of a system where we give people who are able-bodied jobs, work with the counties? Because I know where I live in Park Falls and Manitouish Waters, Minocqua area, there are a million open jobs and they can't find people. So what if we would line people up with these jobs, and then the government could supplement the income? So, for instance, if the job only paid $13, maybe the government would pay them that extra $3, $4 an hour, so it was a $16 or $17 an hour job. That way it would get people in the habit of working, and I think it would help them to find other work or to even improve and to maybe find better jobs within the job that they get. Thank you, and I'll take your comments off the air.
Thanks, Kristen. Jim, go ahead.
So I think that there's a lot of really interesting potential around new ways of supporting people through Public Works Program. I think the trick there is deciding who is able-bodied to be able to just sort of work, because our system today is really set up to make this difference between people who are deserving of support and those who aren't. And anytime you say, okay, well, if you fit into this camp right here, then you need to be doing XYZ to get support, what ends up happening is that you miss these subtle differences in people's lives, that someone may, if you just look at a brief description of them on paper, it may seem like they're a great candidate for this, but what they have going on behind the scenes, who they're supporting, if they're taking care of a family member at home, that may create a barrier to do more traditional forms of paid labor, if they're dealing with mental health issues. There's lots of situations where when you try to say, okay, this set of folks will only get support if they are working, if they're meeting these certain conditions, that you end up putting them in a box that really prevents them from getting ahead rather than assisting it. And so if instead you have this guaranteed income, and then in addition, you can certainly have these programs, these job guarantee programs, if people then want to work for additional money, that actually is a much more enabling and agency granting way of approaching fundamental economic security.
Kind of layering it in and curating it from there. Katie is with us from Eau Claire. Katie, hi.
Good morning. I'm wondering how this affects younger generations, people, let's say, between 18 and 42, and the prospect of them having kids. I imagine I'm a parent. My husband and I have good jobs, but we also have we're treading water, right? We're not able to advance, but we're able to stay in the black for the most part year round in terms of our expenses. But I'm wondering, how does this connect to the birth rate? What does this do in terms of that in our country?
Yeah, Katie.
So to my knowledge, there hasn't been any specific studies around what a guaranteed income does to birth rate. But I know that we have seen many, many cases now of people saying, I'm not in a position to start a family because of economic precarity. And so the more that we can be creating this fundamental income floor, the more we can be pushing back on that. So I would expect to see that if you were to roll this out to everyone in society, that you could in many situations see increased birth rates for those who weren't pursuing families for economic conditions.
I'm wondering if you can give us the nuts and bolts of a program like Stockton, or what is happening in Newark, or what Chicago is exploring. You know, give us more details on how a program would work.
Sure. So these different pilot programs around the country, it's not, there isn't just one approach that people are using, that it's being custom tailored for particular situations that these cities are aiming to address. But at its core, it's giving people on a monthly basis a certain amount of cash, which could be through a check, it could be through direct deposit, it could be through a debit card, depending on what situation they're in and what they choose as far as the most convenient way to receive it. And the amount generally varies between $500 to about $1,250 per month. And so it's a guaranteed income, but it's not, it is covering the very basic needs. This is not something where you can just live comfortably on in just about any situation. It's just providing this underlying floor that you can then build off of through other work, through whatever sort of other activities that you deem to be most productive for you. And that program is then running for some amount of time, generally between 1 and 4 years. And people are, throughout that process, we're seeing what happens to people's lives, what difference is it making for their financial security, for themselves, for their families.
Jim Pugh is with the Universal Income Project in the Bay Area. Do you think the moment is ripe and that this idea will take hold? Or do you think a universal basic income would move our country in the wrong direction? How would you feel about a guaranteed income in your city? Still time for you. Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a minute with Jim Pugh here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We're discussing guaranteed income, an income floor, if you will, what it would mean for families fighting poverty. Is universal basic income fair? Could it boost our economy? Or do you think, would it do the opposite? The former mayor of Stockton, California, founded Mayors for a Guaranteed Income. It now has more than 50 mayors on board, including Madison, Milwaukee, and Wausau. Jim Pugh watches all this. He co-founded the Universal Income Project, and he's with us for about 10 more minutes. Let's go now to Yordis joining us from Colfax. Yordis, hi.
Hi. I think this is a wonderful idea, but I think that a way to enact it would be to start with older people to have a universal income of their Social Security. There's lots of people that make under $1,000 a month when they get to Social Security, and I think that should be the lowest you would get is $1,000. And an example would be my sister who stayed home and took care of her kids when they were little, and then she had part-time jobs as her husband had a full-time job, but then he got cancer and she took care of him for a year and a half. And after he died, she took care of my mother who had dementia. Then her son had a car accident and had an injury to his brain. And it's a tragic and hard story because she was a very comfortable person. And now as she's getting older, she's having to work several part-time jobs around the schedule of her son's appointments for help. And her life is very, very hard. And there are many people that take care of autistic children or have a family illness, or in the case of artists and musicians, they work long hours, but they only get paid per gig or how they sell. They don't get paid for practicing, for working other than what they sell. And so their incomes when they get to retirement age can be very low, even though the amount of time that they worked isn't shown on a piece of paper. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I just think it would infuse the economy with a lot of money. The lower income people need things, and they would just pour that money into the economy.
Yordis, your story is so pertinent and illuminating. Jim, go ahead.
I think that's exactly right. I think there's so many forms of such critical work that people are doing in our society today that is effectively invisible when we actually hear it talked about in the broad sense of what our economy is, because they're not receiving a paycheck for it. And even though it's caretaking work, artistic work, other work in the community, these are things that add so much to our society. And it's so hard for people to manage so much of the time because of the challenges that come up in people's lives. And that's one of the core principles here, is that it's saying, let's stop trying to, from the top, decide who deserves and who doesn't deserve to have enough to survive, and just say, no matter what you're doing, we recognize how much work, how much critical work is happening out there that people are doing that is unpaid, that is unrecognized, and that we're going to guarantee everyone this fundamental income floor. And I think that can make such a difference to people's security, to people's ability to pursue that sort of work, and really remove this massive penalty that exists today for people in that space.
You just mentioned looking first at elderly Americans who are having difficulty sustaining themselves and being able to live. Would you be willing to, or would you see this targeting different groups, or how would that work?
I think that as in the long run, I think that providing this to everyone is going to be the most positive and most transformative to our society. But as far as how we get there, I think certainly something like topping up Social Security payments to ensure that all of them are at a basic income level makes total sense. And oftentimes you'll hear people actually talk about EBI as Social Security for all, because what you could also say is, let's then start lowering the age of Social Security, and so that it does include more and more people in our society. I think another current program that exists and that has received more attention recently with this expansion is the Child Tax Credit, which is really providing this guaranteed income to families with children, so that you are starting next month, people who have children under the age of 18 are going to be receiving at least $250 per month per child. And so, and it's cash. It's there's no strings attached. You do with it what you will. And that's something where if that program can be continued and expanded, then you have guaranteed income for families with children. And so starting in these different places where we can most visibly see this hole in our current social contract, and then expanding from there, bringing these together to eventually provide this unconditional income floor for everyone, I think that could be a very natural way to reach that point.
Taking a more global look at this now, Bill in Superior is with us, having lived in Japan, I understand, Bill.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I lived in Japan with my wife and children for 7 years, and Japan has what he was just discussing is a child tax credit, but it's actually welfare. All children from the age of 0 to 18 and all adults 65 and older receive Social Security. And this really provided that floor for the lower classes not to go into welfare. Japan has the lowest welfare rate in the Western world because of this. On average, it's the same fee to everyone. You get $1,500 per year paid out every 4 months for every child that you have. So it was absolutely critical for single mothers, lower-income workers, and that. And so it really worked very, very well. And they've had it since the late 1990s.
Bill, thank you. Jim, when you look at Japan elsewhere in the world, what do you see?
I think there's a lot of good lessons that there is still no country in the world today that has a true universal basic income or guaranteed income program. But you certainly have examples of different ways of approaching a social contract, a fundamental security, and child tax credit programs, other more long-lasting unemployment programs, different ways that different countries are approaching that security. And I think there's certainly lessons that can be learned from there that those of us in the space have been looking at. And what we've seen pretty consistently is when you're providing that no strings attached cash support to people in society, the outcomes are really, really positive in so many different cases. And so, yeah, we have some great examples.
So as we wrap up here, where are we at in the continuum, in the timeline between cities having all these pilot program experiments and at the policy level that would enact changes?
So as you noted early on, there already are legislative proposals at the federal level for some things that start to get at a guaranteed income program nationally. We have the LIFT Act that was originally introduced by Kamala Harris. We also have programs that have been proposed during the pandemic where providing people with monthly cash payments throughout the pandemic. But in some cases, the proposal has been, let's do that. Let's make sure people are getting a generous cash support as long as it takes the economy to recover. But then we can continue from there and say that let's keep giving cash support to folks beyond that. And so that may be that step into a national guaranteed income program. But there's lots of conversations happening around it now. We're seeing more proposals. And so it may be a few years yet before we actually are able to pass something. But we're certainly closer than we ever have been.
Yeah, but watch the space. Jim, thank you for joining us.
Yes, it's been great to be here.
Jim Pugh, co-founder of the Universal Income Project. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.